Welcome to BoobTube episode 3, where two chicks, Shireen Nicole, Heather Long, talk speculative television in the form of sci-fi and fantasy. This week, we're talking the premiere of Supernatural season 8, Fringe season 5, Doctor Who, the end of season 7.5. We're also got the second season debut of Once Upon a Time and the finale of Warehouse 13. And Heather has a lot to say about that, folks. Then we're going to do a rundown this week. Revolution, Continuum, should we be watching that? Alphas, Grimm, 666 Park Avenue, and again, Heather's got some words about that for you. We're also talking about a show we forgot to mention, and we have a great moment of silence this week. So without further ado, let's dive into the dark and murky waters that are Supernatural. What you got, Heather?
Supernatural Season 8 marks Heather's actual return to watching the show. I will be honest, as a devoted fan for more than 5 years, from the beginning when it first aired back on the WB, I gave up on Supernatural during season 7. They had totally bastardized my Cassiel. They were killing him. They made the show unrecognizable for me. I barely knew the Winchester boys anymore. I found myself literally not caring, and that's a bad place to be in when you're watching a show.
I absolutely agree, especially a show that you love so much.
Agreed.
They actually dismantled most of the characters. They were all unrecognizable.
Well, killing Bobby to me was also kind of one of the final straws.
And Rufus.
Rufus. Well, they were killing them off one by one, and the body counter on the Winchesters has always been high. We've always accepted that from the very beginning with killing their dad. Well, actually, technically killing their mother.
Yes.
And killing Sam's girlfriend. But regardless of which, the return with Jeremy Carver coming back in as showrunner, I decided I was going to give it another chance.
Because you love Jeremy Carver, right?
I love Jeremy Carver. Jeremy Carver is probably one of my favorite writers outside of Kripke as far as this show goes. And at least I get Kripke over on Revolutions now. But when I'm going to be honest with you. I'm watching it. I watched the first episode. I'm seeing my characters again. I'm seeing the Winchester boys again. I'm seeing all of the elements that drew me in the first place.
Absolutely.
But I'm wary. So it's getting the new series show treatment for me. It's getting 3 episodes to stay at that high level of quality, or I'm out.
Okay, and I had a little bit of a different take, although similar. As we had talked about before the show began, this season opener with Dean returning from Purgatory, for those of you that don't know, Dick literally exploded all over Dean in the form of a guy named Dick, and he ended up in Purgatory fighting for his life for an entire year. Heather was mentioning earlier that it very much paralleled the beginning of season 4, where Dean came back from hell. And this, to me, represents that Jeremy Carver is doing a reset of sorts. He's bridging. He's not completely thumbing his nose or giving Sarah Gamble's run the finger. So what he's doing is trying to bridge the Winchesters that we love, bringing them back to us with what Sarah Gamble did. And he does that by kind of wiping the slate clean. There's a sense that as Dean comes out of Purgatory, he's going to get Sam straight. He's going to be the Dean Winchester that we know and love again. And you kind of get that feeling for it, but it is very much a bridge episode. It's exciting, though. You've got Kevin the Prophet, whom they lost, and who Sam just let wander around for a year. As a matter of fact, Heather will tell you that Sam has really been a douche this whole year.
He's been very focused on himself, although that's not unsurprising because it's very true to Sam's character. Sam, in the very beginning, walked away from his entire family. He wanted to go to school. He wanted a normal life. He wanted a girlfriend. And then all of that got taken away from it.
Yes, it seems to happen quite often with Sam. This is the setup. Crawley's back. Dean's back. He actually crawls out of Purgatory with the help of someone you'll recognize as Sheriff Andy from Eureka. Although this time he's got a southern accent and he is a vicious vampire. Kind of sexy in a way, but very scary also. And Dean helps pull this vampire out of hell, bleeds all, well, not hell, it's actually Purgatory, all over his skeleton. Now these two guys are buds. And you get the sense that Dean has found a partner in crime, a comrade at arms.
Brother in arms, someone who's gone through that purgatory, literally, with him. I think it's also telling that there are several moments in the show where Dean refers to his time in purgatory as being a time of purity.
It was pure, yes.
exactly who he has always been meant to be. He was a monster killer. That's what he did. And he survived because he had all of those skills. I think that's another testament to what Jeremy Carver is trying to do with the show, is trying to bring it back to the purity of what Supernatural was, which was a road show where they killed monsters.
Yes, and there's a lot of symbolism in this first episode of season 8 to that point. There's a great moment, guys, where Dean gets his first hamburger again. And there is... And Sam buys it for him. And if you watch the show, you know that that is such a sublime gift, because Sam does not believe in the meat eating. And so there's Dean, just like he's in heaven. And that's a beautiful moment. So there is a sense that we're getting our boys back. Although Sam has found a new woman, and apparently he hit a dog. And I was telling Heather earlier that I have the sense that the veterinarian that he met after hitting the dog is not the woman that Sam has fallen in love with. We haven't met her yet. We've seen her sleeping, but we haven't met her. Now, I have an instinct that the dog is the new woman, and Heather says, ew.
Yeah, that's definitely an ew. And on that note, we're moving on.
Well, sum it up. You had a really nice way of summing the show up.
Sum up the season premiere of Supernatural. Dean went to purgatory and Sam hit a dog.
There you go.
Warehouse 13 aired their mid-season finale for season 4. And I made a comment earlier to Shireen when I was going off about this. Syfy is not my favorite network. Never has been, never will be. It had so much potential for me once upon a time to be the network that I would always tune into. But a few years ago, they decided to take 20 episodes of Eureka and turn it into two separate seasons, which they called 3.0 and 3.5, which subsequently led to 4.0 and 4.5. Basically, it's filming 20 episodes together, airing 10 episodes one year, 10 episodes another year. So that's a 9 to 10 month break between seasons, which is way too long.
Way.
Way too long. But for a good quality show, you're gonna wait out the time and you're gonna come back. Well, it seems to me when they canceled Eureka this year, moment of silence, please. They tried to throw us a bone and tell us they were gonna film 20 episodes of Warehouse 13. Awesome! Yeah, except for the fact that episode 10 aired Monday night, and now the show is on hiatus till sometime next year. In 2013, which sounds an awful like we're going to get 4.5 next summer. Now that said, I think this episode of Warehouse 13 is probably one of the best ones they've ever done. It had so much depth and meaning and gave you a true glimpse into the sacrifices that these people are personally making as warehouse agents. Of course, we've seen it over the years. They always make the joke that warehouse agents only leave three ways: in a body bag, in a psych ward, or bronze.
Yes.
And we never really see warehouse agents leave any other way. And there's no such thing as an old warehouse agent.
Well, we met one, I think, in season 2.
She was the partner of the guy who...
Went back in time, right?
Went back in time. Well, her partner also had a little electrical beast on his back and everything else. She was still a warehouse agent, but she didn't retire. She hid. They thought she was dead, but even at the end of it, she still went back in time and passed away.
Ah, that's true. Well, I didn't mean to sidetrack you, so tell us, what did you love about this episode?
What I loved about this episode is that the season began with the destruction of the warehouse. The fallout of the destruction of the warehouse included the destruction of Pandora's box, which released hope. With the loss of hope in the world was destined to fall into darkness. Artie made a conscious choice to hunt for an artifact that would allow him to turn back time, even understanding that the use of an artifact often has negative consequences. He made this choice. He gradually, one by one, lost each member of his team along the way to doing this, was able to find the astrolabe, turned back time, saved the warehouse, saved the Pandora's box, ended the threat to the world.
And completely screwed himself.
Completely screwed himself. But it was a sacrifice that, you know, even if you were to tell Artie afterwards, this is going to happen to you, Artie would have accepted it as his burden to bear.
He might have, except that he has turned on his team, and the very people he was trying to save, we see in the season finale, he's now starting to pick off one by one.
Well, and it said he was warned through his growing psychosis that using the astrolabe would release a darkness into the world, his worst fear, his worst nightmare. And Artie's worst nightmare is to be the villain. And in this, Artie has become the villain. He is completely mad. And yet, at the same time, he is completely in control.
Yes, once he embraced his villainy, he's very good at it. And the villainous side of Artie still has all of Artie's charm. And he uses it to great effect against his team in this episode.
And there is this really powerful moment right towards the end with Claudia and Artie. Now, from the very beginning of the season, Artie kept seeing images of Claudia stabbing him with a dagger. That actually does come to pass. And there's this moment between Claudia and Artie when Claudia doesn't want to stab him, but you hear Artie's voice inside Dark Artie. I like that, Dark Artie.
Darty.
And do it. Save me. Ending Dark Artie would save Artie.
Yes.
But it was a little too late. In the saving of Artie, and in the, it destroyed another artifact. It released an orchid, which releases a plague of the sweating sickness, which dates back to the 1500s in England and wiped out a lot of people. It spread all over the world. So we bookended this season beautifully for me. It began with the destruction of the warehouse and the release of hope, and the world was going to end. And now it has ended with the release of the plagues. One might even say this is the second of the, you know, four horsemen arriving for the apocalypse. So do we get to see the next two next season? I don't know. I will definitely be there sometime in 2013.
Sometime in 2013. Stay tuned. Next up, we can move on to Doctor Who. Doctor Who ended the mid-season of season 7 with an episode that I have been waiting for. As you know, I have been bitching, whining, and complaining about the Pawns. And yes, I do take full responsibility for my bad attitude. In this episode, my most beloved creation on Doctor Who, especially with the new Who, the Weeping Angels are back. And this time they brought along Weeping Cherubs. And they are vicious. Oh my goodness, people, this was a fun time. This episode starts with Doctor Who and the Pawns in Central Park in New York. They are reading from a book that they later find out was written by River Song. And this book plays a big part in leading them on their journey to what I would like to call Hotel Hell. Why is this Hotel Hell? Because it is basically like a roach motel. People go in, they do not come out because the Weeping Angels are in there waiting for you. And something happens in this episode that we have never seen before, and it will freak you out. And I'm just going to tell you what it is, because spoilers, darling. A weeping angel smiles. Yeah.
That's like the definition of creepy.
Yes, indeed. And so along the pathway to this story, you get some really great husband and wife moments. Great husband and wife moments between the two Pawns, or I'm sorry, the Pond Williams combo, Amy and Rory, and also with Doctor Who and his lovely wife, River Song. Just some really beautiful moments with care and kindness that are very romantic. And it ends with the demise of the Pawns. Yes, baby. If you could see me right now, I'd be doing that weird dance from Fat Albert where all the characters are in the junkyard, like, yeah, shaking and dancing. I'm doing the Charlie Brown happy dance. Okay.
We need to have a moment of silence for Rory.
No!
I really liked Rory.
Rory is fine. Amy's with him, and let's face it, Amy is Rory's drug. She went with his ass. They're gone. Goodbye. Good night. Now, let me tell you the biggest moment of cornholio in this episode. The Statue of Liberty, my friends, is apparently a weeping angel. Yeah. And I'm just going to end it there because there you go.
Going on. I don't really know how you top the Statue of Liberty being a weeping angel. You know what? I know exactly how I'm going to top that. I'm going to go to Storybrooke.
Ooh, I like that place.
Once Upon a Time, Season 2. This has been probably one of my most highly anticipated shows of the season. Arguably, it is now, after this episode, at the exact same level of viewing for me that Vampire Diaries sits at.
Wow.
Anybody who knows me knows that Vampire Diaries is my number one show. It's the one I can't miss. I watch it in real time. I don't worry about commercials. and I will positively shoot people who try to call me during the episode, as Shireen well knows.
I like to play a game where I tell her I'm going to pull an Amelie and make her cable go out during Vampire Diaries, at which point she turns a particularly interesting shade of red.
So, as we come back to Storybrooke, the magic has returned. For those of you who are interested, I have written a very detailed postmortem of the episode on my blog, and we'll post that with this video today. So I'm not going to go into a great deal of detail. I am going to talk about the two big highlight moments in the episode for me. The first being the fact that it was a difference in storytelling. Typically what we've seen is the flashbacks to Fairy Tale Land either revealing some parallel that's going on in the current day Storybrooke to their fairy tale counterparts, and almost always focusing on the characters whoever were key to the episode. For example, anytime we've had Mary Margaret and David together, we saw some flashback to Snow White and Prince Charming. This episode instead focuses on Aurora, Sleeping Beauty, played by the lovely Mary Bolger. And for you Tudors fans out there, that would be Princess Mary, the daughter of King Henry VIII, Prince Philip, as well as the interesting combination ad of Mulan.
Yes.
Mulan was coming. We did not necessarily know that Mulan was going to be in this episode with Prince Philip as his traveling companion.
And as one corner in a love triangle.
Well, yes, and I think they're playing with that. I actually think they're teasing us with that. But we'll get to that in a minute. The part that's interesting is that it, of course, begins with, as in the Sleeping Beauty myth, the prince comes, he cuts his way through the thorns and kisses the princess to wake her up. He cuts his way through the thorns. He's obviously relieved to see the princess, and he looks at Mulan and says, "We're not going to tell her everything right away." Okay, if you're me and you're a romance writer, you sit back and you go, "What, were you two diddling each other in the cornfield before you got to the thorns? I mean, what are we not saying?"
Ooh, I thought so. But of course, we did not know this. We knew it was Mulan, but you're not supposed to know it's Mulan at this moment because she's in full armor.
But it's Oriental armor. And we all knew Mulan was coming, so it wasn't really a big leap to say that's Mulan.
Well, it's the armor from the Mulan movie.
From the movie. Well, and the reason why I bring this up, and beginning in fairy tale world, following the Sleeping Beauty myth, which is our first introduction to it in Once Upon a Time's framework. Meanwhile, back in Storybrooke, of course, everybody is waking up from the curse. Everybody knows who they are. They're all going after Regina. And Henry is asking his mom, Emma, and his grandparents, although I thought that was a hysterical moment when he looked at Prince Charming and went, "Grandpa?" to save Regina. Even though she's the wicked queen, evil queen, can we please save her? And they do. The Snow White story is in Storybrooke, and the Sleeping Beauty story is in Fairy Tale Land. So we're watching the whole episode, and my daughter is looking at me going, "What the hell does this have to do with what's going on in Storybrooke?" Very fair point. We find out at the end that the end of the episode actually happened at the beginning, because there's this huge explosion during the Aurora Philip scene and the arrival of a wraith. And that is the arrival of Emma and Snow White back into Fairy Tale Land. Now, I have a lot of speculation and a lot of places I can go with this, but I'm not going to do that tonight. I did a lot of that in my blog. I will say that I do give the producers props. For one, they gave us every payoff we were looking for. We got a lot of Belle and Gold time. We got a lot of Regina time. We got to see Jefferson's hat, which means we get to see Jefferson very soon, the very delicious Sebastian Stan. And they opened the episode in a very, very unexpected place. New York City, Central Park, with a character that I firmly believe is going to turn out to be Peter Pan.
I was trying to figure it out, and I did not go back and watch the clues, because typically there will be clues that tell you who the person is, and I forgot to go back. What clues did you see?
There were a number of anachronisms in his apartment, for one thing. Everything there was out of date, out of place. It didn't belong in the modern day. He was exhausted, tired-looking. He had that sort of befuddled look, you know, corporate America. He's coming home from a job. He's obviously tired. He doesn't really want to be there. His window won't close. And see, the window was a big clue for me, because in Peter Pan, how does Peter Pan come in and out of the story? Through the window. We never see his shadow in the scene. I actually did go back to look. I never could find a shadow in the scene. And I don't know if that was the lighting or on purpose. But then a dove, or a pigeon, actually, brings a letter with a very old-fashioned Storybrooke postcard, and it says, broken. That's it. Well, for me, now, yes, A, I know Hook is coming, so there's another clue that it might be Peter, but Regina's curse was to end their happily ever afters. What's the end of Peter's happily ever after? Make him grow up. And here we go with the arrival of Hook. It's making me think we're going to do, instead of going back to the Disney fairy tale of Peter Pan, we're going back to the Robin Williams movie of Hook and how Peter has forgotten how to be Peter anymore.
Well, and that's also Disney, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's totally Disney, but I'm talking, we're not doing the animated movie. We're doing the film, the live action film that also featured Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell. That would be really entertaining to me if we actually see Tinkerbell in Storybrooke, but I don't know if we've got time for her right now.
There's a lot going on. And you summed it up beautifully, so I'm going to shut up. And in shutting up, I mean talk about Fringe. Fringe.
Oh, hit me with the Fringe. Let's go.
The Fringe, baby. It was in your face. You know what I'm saying? All up in your face. Okay,
got
so
13 episodes, so they're going to have to be as in your face as possible.
And they go for it. We've had 2 episodes of Fringe at this point, have we? Yes, we have. They start off with a massive time leap. Because our favorite Fringe characters, Astrid, Walter, Peter, and, well, we don't know about Olivia actually when it starts. They're all in Amber. When they are unambered, it is to find a young woman whose name I don't remember, but I can tell you one very important thing. She is Olivia and Peter's very grown-up daughter, and she is a badass. Pretty much the best of both of them. But most shocking about this new world is that the observers have taken over. The observers were very, very benevolent creatures in the full run of Fringe up until this point. And now they are the evil overseers. They are Big Brother and they are ruthless. They love to pick brains apart.
See, but I don't think that that's much of a leap from where the observers were before, because the observers were, they may have been watching, but they did interfere, and they wanted things to go their way.
Well,
they thought it should go.
Well, I think that they were trying to keep the timeline sacrosanct originally, and it was November who was messing with things. Once they saw what he could do and how he could affect the timeline, I think that they became very power hungry. One in particular. But Walter is still Walter. He's amazing. Astrid is fantastic. These folks actually go in and cut off Billy's hand. Oh my God! And use it to break in somewhere. I'm like, they are as badass as they have ever been. In episode 2, they find Olivia, and it's hilarious because they find Olivia in a very funny stalker's apartment. When you see who this stalker is and what he's using Olivia for, you will guffaw. There's no other word for it. It's hilarious. And Peter is not with the happy when he finds his woman that way. In the episode ending, you learn that their daughter is willing to go a bit further than they ever expected because she's grown up in a world without parents and a much darker world than they grew up in. What you also learn is there is a huge rift between Peter and Olivia. They still love each other, but they did not end on a happy note. And so there's a question as to where it's going. Also, one of the observers catches Walter, and they use a very interesting device to bring Walter's memory back or to play with Walter's memory. He goes through a great deal in this episode, as Walter always has. Folks, watch Fringe. It's so good. And this is the final season.
It's funny to me that you're saying they play with Walter's memory, because his memory is something of a kaleidoscope to begin with.
Oh, and they take it a step further because it has been encoded. Walter's memory has been encoded by November, and there are interesting ways of decoding. Yes, I'm telling you, this stuff is good. This is like crack, people. Watch Fringe, catch up, because you cannot watch the alliterative season without seeing everything that came before. But once you have, this will be fun times for you.
I think I'm going to sit back and predict right now that in many ways, Fringe is going to become, I mean, it is a cult favorite. It's already a cult favorite. But I think 10 years from now, we're going to be sitting back and laughing because There will be people discovering Fringe for the first time and going, oh, why did I ever watch it? Just the same way there are people who discover Firefly.
I was thinking the same thing. And much like Firefly, I think there will be a Fringe film. I really do.
I think they're going to do, because the Fringe film seems almost a no-brainer, particularly when you think the fact they made two X-Files movies. So I really think the Fringe film is a no-brainer. And I think, in all honesty, we should give a nod to Fox here, because Fox is giving Fringe a fifth and final season. Its ratings don't say that it deserves it. It does. I mean, and we all know that in corporate America, ratings determine everything. Obviously, they determined Firefly wasn't ever going to be a success, so we only got 13 episodes.
But I think Fox learned from that mistake, and they now know what you said, that they produce sci-fi shows that become cult classics, and they really need to allow them to finish up.
Yeah, well, they did it with The X-Files. They did it with Firefly. Even the Firefly was 13 episodes, although you know somewhere there's an executive who's looking at the Avengers receipts and going, damn, I'm an asshole.
And you mean like DC is looking at the script for Wonder Woman and thinking the same thing? Yeah.
I believe DC is, because they deserve to be. When I heard he first wanted to do Wonder Woman, I was like, ooh, baby, bring it on. But
hello. Thank you. And yeah, they did. And honestly, Fox deserves credit for letting Joss Whedon finish Dollhouse, which was in the pits as far as ratings. Yeah.
So I do think Fox has learned a lot since Firefly. And so where I will sit back and look at Syfy and go, you keep killing my shows, I look at Fox and go, thank you very much for being a participant in my entertainment.
That works for me. So up next, we have the rundown. And what we decided to do this week so that we keep you entertained is to give you some one-liners on some of the shows that we are not going to discuss this week. So, Heather, Revolution, what you got?
Miles is a badass. Billy Burke's Miles, he's pretty rockin', and he is definitely the reason I am continuing to watch the show. But I'll put it to you this way. Miles brought that Monroe Republic into this world. I have a feeling he's going to be the one who takes it out.
Right. On Alphas, folks, all I can say to you is big, smushy babies. Alpha-powered big, smushy babies. It's kind of fun.
666 Park Avenue. I got one word for this show. Creepy. Very, 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 very creepy. Heather doesn't like this show. It gave Heather nightmares.
I can't believe I missed it.
But now having said that, I actually do want to watch the next episode just during daylight hours. If you liked the film The Devil's Advocate, you will love this show.
And I did.
You will love this show. It has lots of potential.
Well, hopefully we'll get to talk about that next week, because I will catch up. And let's end this week's rundown with Grimm. All I can say to you folks is this: wolf up a sheep's skirt, or that's one badass mother-loving sheep.
Don't be mistaken. Next week, Heather will be on a big Vampire Diaries tear. I do promise to try and keep it, you know, on a low keel for you, but no guarantees.
She's lying to you people. Just so you know, we may have to have a Vampire Diaries kickoff episode separate from the normal episode. And a lot of you will be very into that. And bridging from Vampire Diaries to another reason why YA rules right now, we forgot to tell you about this past season of Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf, that is definitely a show that if you have not seen it, you need to watch it. It is a reboot of the Michael J. Fox film back from the 80s, although it has none of the camp.
And none of the comedy. I mean, well, situational comedy, yes.
The character of Stiles is probably my favorite. In the realm of sidekick characters, he kicks ass.
Yes, he does.
He's humorous and very thoughtful at the same time.
He is the main character's best friend, because the main character is still Scott McCall, right?
Yes, he is still Scott McCall. Scott McCall still gets bitten by a wolf. Scott McCall still gets very fuzzy when he sees a girl. And he has all the requisite issues, particularly since the girl he falls for is a girl from a family that hunts supernatural creatures like him.
And they are the family of Buffies, if that gives you any indication of what Scott is dealing with in his love life.
And her father probably was Dean Winchester in another life.
Yes, and her grandfather was probably the devil. He is Lucifer.
Her aunt makes Faith look like a Girl Scout.
You know, you're so right. I didn't even think about that. This is a good show, people. They've got some monsters that we have not seen before, and they use them very well. Full of surprises, full of cuteness, full of romance, full of gore.
I do believe the first season is available and streaming on Netflix, so do be sure to check that out.
And up next, we have a question for you guys. We've heard tell of a time jump show called Continuum, which started out much like Lost Girl in Canada. Now it has come to the U.S. on Syfy, I do believe, and I'm hearing good things about it. It's a woman chasing 8 super criminals through time, and they've come back from the future to our time, and she's got to chase them down and bring them to justice. So you tell us, write a comment on the website or email us. Let us know. Continuum, should we be watching this?
Oh, and in my moment of what the fuckery this week,
yes,
I'm sitting there watching Grey's Anatomy, which is not a show we're discussing here, but I will say I had several tears in my eyes. There was a commercial for a new series called The Last Resort. And in this commercial, it was probably the most condescending piece of crap that I've ever seen put on network television. It said, "Ladies, what do you call hot? Is Scott Speedman in a uniform? Watch Last Resort." What the hell?
Well,
I mean, that tells me jack squat about the show.
Well, they don't care. They can't sell it. It's people in a submarine. They know we don't care. And as you mentioned last week on the episode, werewolf dudes in movies and on television are hot.
Yeah, well, Scott Speedman was definitely hot in Underworld. He is definitely not hot in a uniform. At least not the one they showed us.
Yes, but will he be hot in underwater?
Well, honey, I would rather see him be hot in his underwear. Showed us that, I would be there. But they didn't. So, that said, I look at the show and I'm going, I still don't see the appeal. I mean, if there's somebody out there listening who says, "Oh, no, it's the best thing you've ever seen," you leave us a comment. I promise I will go watch.
And now we come to a moment of silence for a show that both Heather and I enjoyed quite a lot. It was based on a series of books by Jim Butcher. Good. Some people say good. Some people say great. Anyway, they're highly enjoyable, and they feature the wizard Harry Dresden. This show was on Syfy, and one of the reasons why Heather would like to kick them in their shins, it was called The Dresden Files. We got one season that I don't even think was complete.
Now, we got 12 episodes. So we got a complete first season Syfy style. We got 12 episodes, although the backdoor pilot was actually shown later in the season as a two-part episode, which was just one episode. It was Stormfront. It was actually an episode based off of the first novel in Jim Butcher's wonderful series. And the thing about this show that I really liked, and honestly, most shows based off of books are either going to be fabulous or they're going to suck.
Yeah, like Painkiller Jane. Oh, God.
Yeah, it's just not, okay? I can't take it.
Right?
The Dresden Files didn't follow the books religiously. They stayed true to the spirit of Harry Dresden beautifully. And it was played, Harry Dresden was played by Paul Blackthorne. He would not have been my first choice to play Harry. In fact, my first choice was actually James Marsters, because James Marsters does the readings of the Dresden books for audio, and he does such a brilliant Chicago accent for Harry. And for those of you who don't know, Harry Dresden is the only wizard listed in the phone book, the great city of Chicago, and he is constantly dealing with clusterfuck situations.
Yes.
From the police procedurals to the mob to his actual fairy godmother. Yes, he really does have an actual fairy godmother that he can't stand. But all of this aside, it was a great urban fantasy show. It had a lot of fun. It had a lot of magic. It had a lot of humor. And then they just canceled it. They didn't really give us a reason. They just said, "Oh, nope, we're done. Thanks for playing." And it didn't have bad ratings.
No, and much to Sci-Fi's chagrin, shortly after they canceled the television show, the series started to hit the number one ranking on the New York Times bestseller list. Some Sci-Fi dum-dums. And just so you know what a huge WTF-ery moment this was, they replaced the Dresden Files with both Painkiller Jane and Flash Gordon. Two colossally stupid shows.
And while anyways, we're talking about just for a moment here about Paul Blackthorne, we will get to see him on our television here very soon as he debuts with the new series on the CW called Arrow, which focuses on DC Comics' Green Arrow. That starts next weekend. Yes, that will be on the show, because that'll either be the show that Heather's going, woo-woo, look at the new greatness, or, oh my God, what the hell were they thinking?
We'll also be discussing Beauty and the Beast, and as you guys know from episode one, we're really looking to compare it to the 80s series. Yes, we know that's wrong. No, we don't care. And guess what else? That is the show. We're going to wrap it up and say goodbye to you for this week. We'll be back next week. It's going to be jam-packed. Heather will be going crazy pants, so brace yourselves, but it will be a good time as always. This is Shereen Nicole, and that is
Heather Long.
Peace. See ya.